When you're starting a business, it's better to not know everything that's coming. Otherwise, none of us would probably do it.
Hey, everyone. I'm your host, Serena Smith, and this is Shopify Masters, your companion for starting and building a business. Sometimes your biggest insecurities can lead to the greatest opportunities and millions in revenue. Michelle Schemmel was tired of sweating through her expensive silk tops at work, and so she decided to do something about it.
If you're waiting for everything to be perfect, like you're never going to launch, that's something that holds a lot of people back.
She launched Numi over a decade ago, creating its one-of-a-kind sweatproof technology that sparked a brand new clothing category, proving that others needed her designs too.
What is your superpower? What's your niche? What is that specific problem? Because if you're talking to everybody, you're talking to nobody.
Today, Michelle will break down how she turned a pain point into a thriving business. Michelle, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You are not originally from the world of apparel and manufacturing.
Not at all. No, my first job out of university, I was a trader at a bank here in Canada at RBC, and history major by background as well. So really have no experience in retail or fashion. I actually didn't even know another entrepreneur before launching Numi.
You're working in finance, which is a vastly different world. What was the genesis for this idea?
So when I was working in finance, I obviously had to purchase a whole new wardrobe for my new professional career. And one day I realized I was never wearing my favorite clothes because they were either really expensive to dry clean or they were prone to embarrassing sweat stains, like a beautiful silk blouse or even my sweaters. You know, if you get a little deodorant on it, it's dirty and you're not going to want to wear it again. And I realized there'd be like an average Tuesday and I'd reach for my favorite top and then I would hesitate wearing it because I didn't want, you know, the cost or the inconvenience. And, you know, what if nothing fun happened that day? And I realized like the clothes we wear really impacts how we feel. And this was silly. Like, why can't I just wear my favorite pieces every day and feel confident doing so? And when I looked on the market for some sort of solution that I could wear under my clothes that would be invisible, comfortable, and solve this problem, I realized that there was nothing available. So within women's intimates, it tended to be more tank tops and camisoles, which were a great layering piece, but they didn't help keep your clothes clean longer or prevent sweat stains. And then when I looked towards more technical fabrics, it was all within the athletic market. And so you maybe would get that performance, but it was going to be bulky and kind of show through either at the neckline or maybe on the sleeve. And it wasn't designed to be discreet and invisible under women's clothing. And that's when I realized that there was an opportunity here to develop an undershirt for women, which, you know, men have had for years and years, and there wasn't really a comparable solution for women. So I really jumped in the deep end and decided to create one myself.
Many of us, and certainly many of the people watching, have had that moment of like, oh, damn, this thing doesn't exist, and it should. But there is daylight between recognition of that idea and making the decision to actually make it a reality. So what was that process like for you, especially given that you were in a world that was completely unrelated?
Yeah, I definitely think the best businesses start with a pain point. And I think as a founder as well, if you are your consumer, then that helps a lot along the way too, because it's truly a pain point for you. So you can understand, you know, the mindset of your consumer from the get-go and really develop a unique product that will solve that problem.
And you believe in it.
And you believe in it. Exactly. Like, you know, and I truly believe like whatever it is, there's never only one person that has that problem. And in fact, the more niche you are to start, I think the better, because it's a very loud and crowded world out there. So the more niche your product, the more specific you can be about the solution you're solving, I think is best starting point for a new business as well. So for me, I'd left trading and I was interviewing to join what's called a buy side. So work at a hedge fund or a company like that. And at the same time, I was down in New York and I thought, you know what, I have some time on my hands. Like, I wonder what it would take just to get this product, to get a sample of it. And so I did a very in-depth Google search and I found, you know, names of factories in New York. Most of them I would show up and they're like, what company are you from? And I'd say, like, I don't have a company. I'm just curious, like, what would someone do who wanted to create this product? I got a lot of no's. And then finally, I found a partner who helped me design our first prototype and did our first production run that we launched through a crowdfunding campaign.
Okay. Now you're using words like prototype and production run, and it's like old hat for you because you've been in this for a while. But
at the
time, I would imagine like you kind of didn't know what you didn't know.
Totally.
And what can you talk me through? You found this partner at a factory. Mm-hmm. Like, What were those initial learning curves?
So when I found the partner, at first they're like, can you show me an example? Like they just bring, because in apparel, there's a lot of closely inspired by, like they bring a shirt, I want this shirt, change this. But there was nothing like what I wanted. So I literally went, I got a Lululemon shirt, I brought it in, and I'm like this, but not like this at all. It's like, you told me to bring you a shirt, so here's a shirt, but let's start from scratch because the neckline needs to be like this. The sleeve needs to be, you know, flat against the arm. There's all these small details. And I would say the number one thing was asking a lot of questions and not being afraid to say, I don't know what a prototype is. Can you explain that? I don't know what a tech pack is. Can you explain, like, what do you need from me? Okay, you need hang tags. Do you know a supplier? And so I really built our supply chain as well through asking questions and getting, you know, referrals to other suppliers and slowly building my network. And then I started working with consultants who had deep experience in supply chain and product design. And if I was to start again, I would find that person first because they can, you know, cut years and a lot of dollars off your learning curve. And it doesn't need to be a full-time basis. Like there's a lot of contractors out there who you can hire on small project basis to help you get your idea off the ground. And they'll know all of the smaller things that you need to get in line and help you answer those questions.
There is so much that is unique about each founder's journey. And then there are these sort of overlapping themes. And one of them seems to be sort of like, you don't know what you don't know. And you were coming from a world where you had developed a degree of mastery, and then you're entering a world where you're a beginner. On like a psychological and personal level, what was that transition like for you and how did you navigate it?
I think you're spot on that when you're starting a business, it's better to not know everything that's coming. Otherwise, none of us would probably do it. You kind of have to get used to the fact that there's fires and problems. Like that's part of every day. Like you can't be set back by that. It has to energize you. And I think the, you know, at least one of my strengths and most entrepreneurs' strengths, I think, is problem solving and figuring out, okay, nothing is unsurmountable. Every day there's going to be a problem of sorts, and that's okay. That's what makes us better. That's what makes us stronger. That's probably going to lead us to somewhere better, you know, afterwards, once we work our way through it. That's part of the journey. And no, so if you knew everything ahead of time, it would probably feel a little bit daunting. But really, I think you take what's the next step I can do. And so who's that supplier I can contact or reach out to someone on, like, LinkedIn's amazing for that. You can find a consultant or a contractor, you know, who's been there before and done it before. And I think the environment we're in now too, there's a lot more people out there who are, you know, working remotely and kind of more open to contracting roles. So that's a great resource to lean into if you were to be starting from scratch today. And it's just always thinking, okay, what's that next step I can do today? You don't have to figure everything out for the next 10 years today. You just need to figure out what's going to take me one step closer to launching and one step closer to solving the problem that I'm facing.
It's such a great point because it's like, if you wait for all of your ducks to be in a row, then invariably, like, the thing might never come to fruition, right?
I think that's where a lot of people get stuck, or why you don't start a business exactly, is you think you have to have everything figured out from the get-go. Or there's this concept of the gap that I always think about. It's kind of where you are now and where you want to be. And there's always going to be a gap there. And the more you're learning and developing, the better you're going to become. And so for me with a product, let's say, when you're ready to ship your product, the one you have in hand today, it might not be the best that you know you could make because you've learned along the way. But you still need to get that in market because it's still probably like 99% good. And that's part of the journey. And you can evolve. And if you're waiting for everything to be perfect, like, you're never going to launch. And I think that that's something that holds a lot of people back.
That's such an important lesson. And also an interesting thing to, like, hold in your mind, these two truths. Like, yeah. Oh, I've already sort of evolved beyond this point, but mm-hmm. I've got to get this thing out in the market
totally.
In this moment.
So for example, with us, like, the product we launched on our crowdfunding campaign, it didn't have any technical fabric in it. It was just a really well-fitting, beautiful fabric undergarment that had a second layer of fabric to absorb moisture in the deodorant, but it didn't have a technical fabric. And by the time we shipped that, it was hard. I was like, oh, but I know this isn't, you know, the best, but it still solved that problem. It still added a lot of value to the consumer and to our customers. And in that time, we learned and we made the product better. And then you launch that. And I think that's part of any brand you see. You know, you always look to my North Star brands. They're always doing that. They're always, you know, launching version 2 or 3. They're always iterating because the world gets better, the materials we use get better, and that's okay. And I think it's kind of a fear response a little bit when you're always searching perfection before starting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have this idea, I think, internally is humans that we need to be fully actualized. But you bring up such a great point. Like within the companies and the brands that we love, we've seen their evolution and we accept it, right? That there's going to be growth. Things are going to change and get better over time.
Exactly. And from a business perspective, it's also good. It gives a new purchase occasion for your customer because you've given them a product that was the best you could do at that time. And now you've taken their feedback into account. You've made it even better and a new reason for them, you know, to come back and shop with you again. But across the board, every business is always evolving and it's, you know, it's really important. So
how did you get the word out for that first production run, especially given that you were launching something that didn't really exist in this space prior?
I did my own PR and I think you still can. I think, you know, when you're starting out, being really scrappy is your superpower. And, you know, as a small business, I think it will always be your superpower that you can respond really quickly and be very agile. So I, you know, researched a lot of reporters or journalists who had written on similar topics, whether that was, you know, fabric technologies or women's intimates, and reached out to them to share my story and what I was building. And, you know, I think, again, like with the fear, people think, oh, are they going to want to write about me? But reporters and journalists and, you know, consumers, they want to learn about cool new things. And if you're building something that's cool and new, you know, it adds value to everyone. So I did the PR outreach on my own and friends and family helped spread the word as well. I think one of the cool things with crowdfunding, even to this day as well, is that it enables you to share your journey. And so if you are starting out, you can start to build that momentum with your consumer by sharing, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm building. This is what, you know, where I'm at. And it can kind of build a deeper affinity to your story and your brand as well prior to launching.
How big do you think that personal connection to the brand is for the consumer when it comes to Noumi?
Richard Branson actually talks about this as a lot as well, of having a face to the brand is really important. And I think now more than ever in our current very loud, very AI-driven world, having a personal connection can be your strength as a small business. And when you share your story, it allows someone to connect with you and what you're doing. And so, for example, with what we're doing, like a lot of women don't want to talk about sweat. And so I see it on their face. You know, I used to explain it like, you know, when you're sweating or if you have a big meeting and the first reaction, because there's a bit of social stigma around it, was like, no, that doesn't happen to me. So then I would always start with, well, I had this problem. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as you say, I have this problem, then the other person's like, okay, yes, that happens to me too. Because you kind of open the door to community and to a shared experience and take down that barrier of like, there's something wrong with you. It's like, no, this is totally normal. We all face it. And here's, you know, something we can do to help solve it.
Yeah, vulnerability begets vulnerability.
Exactly.
Yeah. Did you have any reticence to talk about it?
No. When I was working in finance, I had a few very good friends who were some clients and colleagues, and we talked about these things all the time. So I knew it was a common pain point for a lot of women. So when launching this, I was just comfortable. I mean, I had to be too, because this is like the core tenet of the problem we're solving. And I think, you know, raising awareness and shedding some light on it takes the stigma away from everyone as well.
Do you remember, was there a moment where you thought like, oh, I'm kind of getting the hang of this?
Yes and no. I think where I'm more comfortable is just in the unknown. And so, no, I don't think you're ever getting the hang of it because the world is changing so fast. There's always new things that are coming up. But the one thing I've gotten more comfortable in is that I will figure it out. And so every business, you know, whether it's cash flow problems or production problems, or I've seen them all now so many times that even though it's always scary and it brings up that fear and you're like, okay, how is this happening? I know that I'll get through it because I've gotten through it before and I trust in my team, I trust in myself. And, you know, as I said, I think every problem is surmountable. And so it's just a matter of breaking it down and taking that, okay, what's that one step I can do today?
Yeah, there is something to be said for, I think, what I would call like the contagion of courage. Yeah. It's like once you do something really courageous and step outside of your comfort zone and show yourself what you can do, then having to do it the next time and the next time, it feels like gets a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Does that feel right?
I think you build trust in yourself and trust that you can figure it out and that, yes, it's scary. There's definitely a big emotional journey, I think, of being an entrepreneur because everything is on your shoulders. And so you need to really learn how to like presence yourself and not get caught up in that story and that fear, which, you know, is going to come. And it's kind of separating, okay, this is the story I have about what's happening. What's like the reality of what's happening and what can I do today? And the best way to move through fear is through taking action.
You want to do your research, but you don't want to get stuck in the planning phase for too long.
Of course, like, you know, I've met other blooming entrepreneurs and they're working on a 100-page business plan. And it's like, you don't need to spend 3 years on your business plan. Like your best business plan is going to be, you know, understanding, of course, your niche and your, you know, unique selling points and your strategy, but getting in market and learning and iterating is going to be the most important thing because you can get stuck in that planning phase and then you're never going to take action.
Your core value proposition is with these garments that help keep women sweat-free and in their nice clothing so that it's not just hanging in the closet.
Yes.
What have like your iterations been over the course of the business?
We want to inspire women to feel comfortable and confident in whatever their day faces. And so we really believe that, you know, you are the star of your own show. We all know that, you know, what we wear really impacts how we feel. So we've created a product that's going to make you feel more comfortable, more confident in your clothes. So you can focus on, you know, the things that really matter, whether that's, you know, a big meeting, a presentation, a soccer game with your kids. If you're having to worry about, you know, being finicky with your clothes, it's distracting you from being present. So we've built this product and product line. And as it's expanded, we've launched new styles, new colors. So again, trying to address what are all the different pieces in a woman's wardrobe and how can we create an undershirt that would fit seamlessly and visibly underneath that. Some of our shirts now women will wear, you know, on their own as well. Like we have a great crew neck that you can wear just as a t-shirt. It's kind of a better tee.
Are there directions that you have explored that have not panned out and you've had to abandon ship?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as you're building a business, it's always, you know, always thinking, okay, what's next? What's that new purchase occasion that I can bring to my current customer base? And my bigger kind of thesis that I see an opportunity is identifying these pain points in a woman's wardrobe and how can we solve them using beautiful design and technical fabrics. So we launched a line of silk blouses that were all sustainable and machine washable. They're beautiful blouses. I still love them. The thesis was that this was an upsell or kind of a cross sell to our undershirts. What we saw was it kind of created its own cult consumer to that. And then I realized we had almost two brands that I was trying to build and two, you know, unique products. And they were almost competing against each other versus supporting each other. So we've phased out the silks for now to really lean in on our core competency and where I see the bigger category opportunity, which is the women's undershirts. And that's really where we are the leader in the market. Probably the only, maybe there's a few other smaller competitors, but the only solution for this particular pain point. And I think that that's the best opportunity for the business to.
What is your relationship with that competition? Given that you were the first in this category, and now you've seen some other competitors spring up, like, does it conjure anxiety or do you see it as a compliment? What's your relationship with it?
You know what? When competitors come in, it actually helps us in a way because it's a new category. We need to educate on what this is before I even talk about Numi and what makes us different. We always have to explain, okay, here's your problem. You know, maybe you get sweat stains. Maybe it's dry cleaning. Maybe you just don't want to wash your clothes all the time. Here's the solution. Wear an undershirt. This is how it'll integrate into your wardrobe. So there's a lot of education that we have to educate our consumer on the category. So when competitors come out, it actually helps us because it helps broaden the category. And women will often try different products if they find something they like. And I mean, we know from our customer experience, we have a beautiful product. Our shield doesn't crinkle. So a lot of other undershirts out there, there's like a plastic layer in it that makes it crinkly, kind of bulky sound. So I'm quite confident we have the best product on the market. So when competitors come in, it actually helps broaden and educate the consumer. And what we've seen is though then we'll try different brands or maybe they'll try a cheaper brand because it's cheaper and then realize or see the value that they get with our product.
You spoke a little bit earlier to the crowdfunding component. Was that how you financed the business? Can you take me
through that
into
journey.
The texture of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank yeah. you. So that helped our first production run. And then we did bootstrap the business for, oh gosh, the first about 7 years. Then we did a small friends and family round, which helped with our growth. We have accessed other inventory financing. So we've used Shopify Capital a few times. And that's kind of where we're at now is we will use, whether it's a line of credit or Shopify Capital, to help with our inventory buy, especially in our industry. We need to purchase, obviously, ahead of time, all of our inventory. And you can only, if you have a product-based business, you can only grow as much as you have product to sell. But our seasonality, you know, we're needing to buy all of our clothing for Q4, which is our biggest quarter, in Q2, Q3, which tends to be our slowest season. So you do need some financing mechanisms in place to help that. Otherwise, we are trying to focus again on just growing a bootstrap, like organic business.
That decision to do a friends and family round or to try to raise outside capital is so specific. Why was that the moment for you?
That was at a point we were growing really, really quickly and we needed additional financing in the business.
Did you begin the business in direct to consumer or elsewhere?
No. So when I first started, we went with a traditional wholesale model. So we were in a few hundred boutiques across Canada and the US. I would literally like pack up my sample bag, like drive around the US, to go to all these independent doors and introduce the product to them, sell the product, sell them our line, and then get back in the car and go to the next boutique because, you know, nobody picks up the phone. We had our online store, but it wasn't a huge focus of mine. And then in around 2017, 2018, I realized that, you know, I'm spending all this time and effort trying to open this wholesale channel. But it was a classic like 80-20. You know, 80% of my effort was over here, but 80% of our revenue was coming direct to consumer. And so we decided to make the shift and we went exclusively online direct to consumer. We started investing in Meta ads. That year we saw like over 300% growth, almost 400% growth actually, when we went exclusively online and started investing in the paid media channels. And I think still to this day, if you want to reach people at scale, Meta ads is still the best avenue, I would say. It's changed a lot. It is definitely a lot more complicated, but you can still see a lot of success, especially if you have a clear problem solution. So again, for us, another reason we saw success on that channel was on the wholesale floor, we were then relying on the salesperson to explain, what is this undershirt? Why do they need the undershirt? How do they style it? Again, you're facing what we talked about before, the social stigma. So if a salesperson comes up to you, start talking about sweating, you might be like, no, it's not me. I don't want to talk about it with you. I don't know you. Whereas online, if someone's on there scrolling through their phone, you see an ad about sweat stains. You're like, yep, that's me. Like there's no one judging you.
Right. It's anonymous.
It's anonymous. Safe. It's safe. And then we can control that messaging, that education, explain what's the problem. Here's the solution. We can really control the journey. So I think that's why we saw, or when we still see success through that channel, because we're still trying to build this new category. And Meta is a great place if you have a clear problem solution. Like I think it's a lot more difficult to launch ads if it's, you know, a very competitive space and you don't have a strong differentiator, which is what I would suggest if you're starting a business as well, is like, what is your superpower? What's your niche? What is that specific problem? And then you can lean into that in your advertising. And, you know, you're never the only one with the problem. So you're going to find your people.
Right. And in that context, you get to own the education, as you were saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You get to own the education. And then, you know, they're coming to your website. I still think that it's a strong channel. You can, you know, building emails, another really important avenue that you know, I don't think we really leaned into that channel early enough, you know, building that email list and really having a sophisticated email program where you can talk to your consumer with where they're at, whether they've abandoned their cart or they're, you know, abandoned the website or just taking them through your welcome flow. You can actually talk to them and educate them on who you are, what you're doing, why you're doing it.
Paid ads and building your email list. Are there any other tips that you have for entrepreneurs, especially within the apparel category in terms of marketing?
I think I would say my other tip within apparel would be keeping your line really tight to start because, you know, inventory is, it's probably one of the most difficult aspects of building an apparel brand. And so if you look at a lot of our North Star brands, whether it's like a Spanx or even a Lululemon, you know, they started with that like one pant for how long, or True Classic more recently, obviously a very strong D2C success story. They started with that one problem, that one t-shirt. And if you have something you can sell season after season as well, you're not going to be bound by the same tight like seasonal selling windows.
Can you talk to some like earlier pain points in terms of those early production runs and manufacturing and lessons learned? Were there times where you were just looking at a bunch of unused merchandise that you had to get rid of?
We did our first production run offshore, and then we brought it all back to Canada. And that helped. Having domestic manufacturing helped a lot at the beginning because we could do smaller runs. We could buy the fabric and then adjust to what was actually happening, like in demand. So, you know, you think one style is going to take off, another one does, and we could adjust our cuts based on that. So that was really helpful. We could get terms from our suppliers, which helped from a cash flow perspective. Now we have a lot of data. So we are looking to expand and work with some offshore partners to just diversify our supply chain. But that's for our best-selling styles that, you know, we know pretty predictably, like how many units we're going to sell. I think more lessons learned would be just on the quality control side. And especially because I didn't have a background in apparel, I kept learning based on experience. And so, you know, you'd get a fabric delivery and I didn't do the proper quality control. And, you know, one time like the lycra content was wrong. And so the fabric literally didn't stretch and it was, and then it had been cut and sewn into garments. So I had all these shirts that I couldn't sell because you could not even get them on because they were so, they didn't stretch wow. like, at all. So you learn through that. Or one time we received it and it was like way too short. And so you learn, okay, you know, and that's again where I think I would come back to working with a consultant or someone who can help you navigate these issues and what you need to really pay attention to and look for.
How do you control for quality these days?
We have a very long list of things that we check before anything is approved, making sure before they go into any production run, you're seeing what's called a top of production. So, you know, one of each size and every color, every style. Like it's little things like the tension of the yarn. That's another thing that happened once. You know, the yarn tension's too tight and then they can't, you know, the bottom of the garment can't stretch. So some of the things you learn through trial and error, and they're painful learnings, and then you never make them again, make that mistake again.
I would imagine customer feedback plays a big role here as well.
So things like that, you don't ship because if you can't wear the product. And then in terms of iteration, customer feedback plays a big role. Exactly. So we have caught issues in production through feedback as well. If you get, you know, two or three comments about a similar thing, then you'll go back to that production run and labeling your units so that you know where things came from or what production run they're attached to is helpful. And I would say customer feedback, though, is more in terms of how can you improve your product. It's a really great place to learn. It's a balance, though, because you have to think if one person comes to you, you know, with a negative comment, do not change your whole line because customer feedback can also be skewed to the negative because most people mm-hmm. tend to only, you know, write in or give the reviews if they're unhappy. I think I always come back and think, okay, what do I feel like I'm a pretty mainstream consumer? What would I do? And I like rarely write reviews. I rarely tell a brand if I think they're doing a really great job, but you will if you are unhappy, mm-hmm. but it's a good starting point. Okay, so this customer has, now let's pay attention to that. Is that a trend? Can we reach out and survey our other customers to see, is this something that would improve their product? Or is it actually a feature that maybe really love and taking it away is going to, you know, disappoint your loyal fans?
So you were in wholesale and then you made the shift to D2C.
Yep.
And is that the universe that you plan to stay in for the future?
I won't say forever, but for the near future, yes. I think that there's still a lot of opportunity. I still think it's, you know, especially building category awareness. I think we're still a pretty lean team and, you know, trying to be scrappy with how we're scaling. So if a wholesale opportunity came knocking, I would obviously look at it, but it's not, you know, I think even within wholesale, like that channel, it can get expensive in itself. And it sounds great to be in Nordstrom or Neiman or whatever, but you can end up with an invoice at the end of the day because you're paying for all the marketing, you're paying for, you know, anything that gets returned, you're paying for any promotions. And I always think like you want someone to go to a department store to buy your product, not to discover you, because rarely does a consumer discover a new niche brand in a large department store. Some avenues that I would like to look at are like a television shopping channel, I think could be an interesting opportunity mm-hmm. for us, where again, we've got the opportunity to, you know, explain the product and showcase it and reach a new customer base through that.
What keeps you going day after day?
Our customer feedback, I would say. I think on the hard days, I always read those reviews of, you know, women who write to us just saying how we've completely changed how she feels in her clothes, or she wears color now and she used to only wear black. And, you know, she feels so much more confident in a meeting, and knowing that we're solving a real pain point that I think on one hand, people could think, oh, it's silly, it's clothing. It really solves a very deep, like emotional, like anxiety in a lot of women. And so if we can empower her to feel comfortable and confident in her everyday life so she can, show up and just focus on what really matters, then that's what really keeps us going. So knowing that the products we make a difference in our customers' life is really inspiring.
Yeah. I mean, I guess some people would want to paint it as shallow or vain, but you're right. It's like, it really impacts the way you move through the world.
Totally. Like, I've been in that situation before starting it. You have sweat stains and now you're like thinking about keeping your arms down and you're not paying attention to the person you're talking to, or, and then that just makes it worse as well. But
right, you can't be present.
You can't be present, no.
Something that I've noticed throughout the course of this conversation is like, we're living in this intensely digital universe, but there's so many points in your story where it seemed like you were just like you were out in real life, pounding the pavement, talking to people. Is that still a big component of what you do? And would you recommend that to others?
Definitely. I think if I could turn back the hands of time, I would say I would have gotten involved in entrepreneurial communities like earlier. Even I didn't join, let's say, a co-working space early on because I wanted to save the money. But in hindsight, I'm like, I wish I had, because all the things I learn, whether it's new apps, you know, to add to your Shopify store, or how is everyone approaching the changes that happen every day in Meta ads, you learn that through conversations with other entrepreneurs, and they don't have to be in your same line of business either. Mm. Because if you're direct to consumer, it doesn't matter what you're selling, we are all facing the same problems. And often the solution can be applied. You'll have to change it to, you know, be applicable to your business. But learning those tools and kind of getting that feedback is really important. And I think is going to help you build faster and stronger and eliminate a lot of, you know, potential errors if you can talk it through with someone who's been there.
Were you lonely?
I think being a solo founder can be a little lonely because you don't have, and again, this comes back to having founders you can talk to, because you don't have a social life at work the same way you did. Like when I was at RBC, like my colleagues were a big part of my social life. We would hang out every day. We would talk about all these things. Whereas when you're a solo founder, a lot of things are on your shoulder, and that can be a little bit lonely. So I think tapping into, whether it's your friends, your family, or building your own, you know, founder network is really important.
You went from doing something that was much more narrow and specialized and focused to then having to wear like umpteen hats.
Yes.
What challenges are you proudest of having figured out how to wrangle? Mm-hmm. The stuff that in the beginning you were like, oh God, I have no idea what I'm doing. And yeah. Now you're good at it. You enjoy it.
The thing I'm most proud of is that I just did it, is that I like jumped in, I got that prototype and I launched it and, you know, I got the product to market. And then from there, I've learned a lot. Like, I don't love dealing with supply chain and production. And now I'm blessed, you know, I have a good team that manages most of that for me. We obviously am heavily involved. I still love the marketing aspect of that. So, and I think as a founder whose product did truly come from, you know, such a core problem I had, I think for me being involved in the marketing side is important. And I love that aspect as well. And I think it allows me to connect with the customer and it helps us with our product development. And, you know, we are working on some new things and that's truly either evolved from other pain points I see that are aligned with our product or from what we've heard from customers.
Can you tell us what you're working on?
We're coming out with a line of thermoregulating sleepwear. So that's very exciting. So if you have hot flashes, it actually regulates your body temperature. So it'll keep you cooler when you're warm, warmer when you're cool. So it's a technical sleepwear line.
The menopause component of it and perimenopause, which is also such an avoided and not talked about subject, but is a huge issue for people. Is that something that you represent in your marketing?
Every business will talk about their avatar, let's say. Which is kind of like, who's your core customer profile? And so for us, there are a lot of use cases for the product. And we've right now really lean into that professional woman, just so we don't dilute the messaging. It doesn't mean that we don't have a lot of other women who wear our products because it solves a problem. So for example, we have a lot of nurses that wear our undershirts because under their scrubs, they're not breathable. Or if you work in a hospital, you know, the hospital washes the scrubs with like harsh chemicals. So it's a great solution for them to wear under that. A lot of flight attendants wear it under their uniforms, a lot of menopausal women. So there's a lot of different use cases where I think our undershirts are at a lot of value. Again, I think it comes down to, you can't spread yourself too thin. I really think you want to, okay, let's stay narrow and deep on who we're talking to. So I think staying really focused is important, both with product and in marketing. Because if you're talking to everybody, you're talking to nobody.
I would imagine this list is pretty long for any entrepreneur. But looking back, if you knew then what you know now, give me one top of the heap thing.
I would have gotten on Facebook ads when they were still, you know, $15 to acquire a customer instead of driving around to each boutique business. So, no, I think one thing, build community. I think build that mastermind group, whether it's formal or informal mentors where you can learn from, because you're going to figure things out a lot faster if you can talk to people who've been there and done it than if you're going to try and do it on your own.
Yeah, and I think there's such an important lesson too in just like humility and like being willing to kind of be like the dumbest person in the room.
Totally. I think even with your team, like you always want to be hiring people that are smarter than you and more experienced. And they don't have to be older than you. They can also be young, like always learning from everyone around you. Exactly. And one thing I always say, I'm like, this is how I would do it, but it might not be the best way. Like, what are the other, like, I'll always give a solution, but I want to hear everyone else's too, because, you know, you're never the smartest person in your room. And if you can really learn from other people and look at whatever the problem is from different angles, you're going to find the best solution.
And if you are the smartest person in the room, you're probably in trouble.
Yeah.
Thank you, yeah. Michelle.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Delight. And thank you for tuning into Shopify Masters. Be sure to leave us a comment below, let us know what you thought about the episode, and subscribe so that you don't miss any upcoming interviews. We'll see you next time.